This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're going to talk now about advice. If you could go back in time and talk to yourself when you were 25 years old, what would you say? What advice would you give your younger self? That is a question Imran Nouri put to more than 1,000 of our fellow Americans. Nouri is a Chicago-based storyteller and public speaker, and a couple of years ago, he set out in his Toyota Camry on a journey across America. It was, he said, a reaction to a quarter-life crisis. On the trip, he spoke with and photographed more than 1,000 people, collecting their hard-earned wisdom along the way. He's now compiled all that into a book called Advice from America, which is available now. Imran Nouri, welcome to The 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to tell you more about my story.
So, as ever, listeners, you are invited to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. And I'm curious, what advice would you offer to your 25-year-old self? What would you tell yourself to do more of or to do less of? To worry more about and to worry less about? 800-222-9455 is the number to join us. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's begin back in 2022. You said you felt like you were going through a quarter life crisis. What form does that take for you?
Yeah, that took on a very interesting form in traveling and trying to figure out the meaning of life, but it was triggered by graduating college in the middle of the pandemic and getting stuck in a job that I didn't particularly like. And then, of course, having to shut down a startup nonprofit that I had built and worked on for thousands of hours. All of that, compiled into, okay, what do I want out of life? What is this? What even is the meaning of life? What's the purpose? And so I went out to ask 1,000 strangers to figure it out.
It strikes me that the term quarter life crisis is a relatively new invention for an old phenomena, which is what do I really want to do with my life? Does that strike you as fair or accurate summation?
That's 100% accurate. For me, it was like the question I ended up asking myself was, if I knew I had a year left to live, how would I live it as a way to kind of force myself into living the best life that I possibly could?
And so with your year left to live, metaphorically speaking, you decided to do it in a Toyota Camry. So talk about that, living in your car, driving across America.
Yeah, that's right. So I had a Camry, and what I knew I wanted to do was to go to all the lower 48 US states, and I wanted to ask complete strangers about what they know now that they wish they had known earlier. Now, I didn't have the budget to do this. I ended up taking out a personal loan and creating a Patreon for people to support me, and then using what little savings I had to do this. Now, had I stayed in hotels along the way while going to all these lower 48 states, it would have doubled my budget. And so I decided, you know what, I have the Camry. I am 24 years old at that time. I am, I think my body can handle sleeping in the car in the front seat, leaned all the way back for a few months, if that's what it takes.
How's the Camry holding up, I have to ask? Is it still in
your life? It was great. It was awesome. Honestly, it was a 2018 Camry. I did this trip in 2022. I think it had 25,000 miles on it when I started. And so the Camry is the ultimate reliable car, and it definitely served me well, going 15,298 miles over 84 days.
There you go, 15,298 miles. Okay, so how did you plan this trip? Did you have a specific route you were going to follow, or just, sort of put your thumb in the air, so to speak, second star to the right, straight on till morning?
I didn't have a specific route that I followed. I knew a general order of states that I would go in, and I started from my hometown in Columbus, Ohio, and did a sort of clockwise loop around the country, as clockwise as it gets. And I just figured out where I was going to go every morning. I'd look at the rest area that I had slept at, and I would see, looking on Google Maps for the next rest area I could go to, one that looked safe and had decent reviews. And then I would just say, okay, what's in between? I'll just stop wherever seems interesting, wherever there might be people, if it's downtown areas or parks or small shops, wherever it might be. And I did it like that for the entire trip. I kind of didn't have a specific plan or route.
What was that like, sleeping in rest areas? I mean, sometimes people are not necessarily very nice to people who they might assume are, vagrants, to use an old-fashioned term for that. What was your experience? Did you run into any trouble along the way?
Yeah, sleeping in rest areas was really interesting. It's something I had never done before. The first few nights were scary. I won't lie. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm here alone. I had pepper spray with me in case I got into a sticky situation, but that can really only go so far. And generally speaking, I was also in places that I knew nothing about. So the first few nights were definitely scary. I think after that, I started to get more and more comfortable with it as I got further away from my home, right? There was no turning back. I think what I had to keep reminding myself was just that humans are extremely adaptable, and sleeping in a car at a rest area that's well lit, where actually other people were probably also sleeping in their car, is not the worst case scenario situation that a human could be in. And I reminded myself of that. It kind of put things into perspective, and I was like, okay, I can do this. This is no problem to sleep in the front seat. And luckily I never had any issues.
So talk about finding people to talk to, the actual work of going around and interviewing people, taking their photographs. How did you approach that?
Yeah, I approached people generally who were alone, because when I tested this series on a much smaller scale here in Chicago before I decided to do this trip, and I found while I was going around the city talking to strangers that I got better answers from people when I was one-on-one with them than if they were with their partner. I always say, you know, if you're with your partner and a guy with a camera and yellow Crocs comes up to you and asks you for life advice, the first thing you're going to do is turn to your partner and say, I don't know, what do you think? And it's not really about what your partner thinks. It's about what do you wish you had known when you were younger for yourself, you know, be real with me. And so I would just walk up to someone and I would say, excuse me, can I ask you a question real quick? And to give you a visual, you know, generally speaking, I was wearing my yellow Crocs. I always had my 50-year-old twin lens camera in my hand. I always had a huge smile on my face. And that's what I would say, excuse me, can I ask you a question? And then I'd give them my spiel. I'd say, I'm currently driving across the country, talking to strangers, asking them for life advice. If you've got 2 minutes, I'd love to ask you a life question and take your photo. And about 80% of all the people agreed to it.
Was that difficult for you at first? I got to say, I've been a reporter for going on 20 years now. I still find it takes some like effort to psych myself up to cold approach a stranger. Or does that come easily to you?
That did not come easily to me at all. That was a huge reason for doing the trip. In addition to trying to figure out the purpose or meaning of life, it was also to push myself as far out of my comfort zone as I possibly could. And for me, that was, you know, I would also get paralyzed thinking about even talking to a stranger. I was like, I want to do this thing so that my comfort zone expands so that I don't ever have to hesitate to talk to a stranger ever again, unless that stranger might be a weirdo, you know. But generally speaking, you know, if it's like at the grocery store, just to tell a stranger like, hey, I like your outfit or something like that. That was something that used to paralyze me. So doing this was way, way, way uncomfortable and out of my comfort zone. But after doing it over and over and over again, it became seamless.
You mentioned the photographs. I was looking at some of them on your website. They're really quite striking, black and white. Talk. And you also mentioned the camera. I saw a picture of this. I wasn't sure if this was a prop or something you actually used. but talk about, this is like for people, let me paint a radio picture here. This is like picture a 1950s movie. And, you know, the guys all come in and they've got the camera with a little accordion on it. And, you know, over here, take your picture.
Yeah, that's exactly
talk,
right.
Talk about your device.
Yeah, so I used it looks very, very old. It's a 50-year-old Yashica camera. Many people are more familiar with the Rolleiflex, the classic two lenses, one on top, one on the bottom type of camera to paint the picture. And I chose to use that for a couple of different reasons. One of the big reasons was that everybody has a camera now, and a lot of photos look exactly the same. It is unique to take photos on a 50-year-old camera on 6x6 film. In black and white, it just has a look that is not able to be replicated by digital, even in software. After there's always signs that it's, you know, fake film. So to shoot it on real film was really like a way to make the photos look unique. But on top of that, the strangers who I photographed wouldn't get to see the photos right after I photographed them. And that kept us in the moment, right? Instead of them saying, oh, I kind of don't like the way that my hair looks, or honestly, even we couldn't even know if they blinked. It was just keeping us in the moment. I'm going to take this one snapshot. And it was very much a, if this is meant to be, it'll be. And if not, that's okay. Like, we know we met and nobody will ever get to see that photo because it didn't turn out or the person blinked. But if it's meant to be, it'll happen. And so at the end, I had photographed 1,024 strangers, one photo each, and only 9 of them blinked. And then the other 15 to go were just slightly lower quality photos.
How complicated is that camera device to use to set up?
It's not as complicated as someone might think to use a camera like that. I mean, I've been a photographer for a while. I grew up with cameras, and so it's really about setting the settings manually, and then you look down into the screen. It's a piece of glass, and in the screen, the image you see is reversed sideways. So it's interesting because you kind of get to see a fresh look at the universe even when you're looking at something that's right in front of you. But that also helps you to create a photo that is more objectively good, right? Because you're looking at it a completely new way to see it flipped reverse. It's like holding a mirror right in front of you and walking around your home. It's gonna feel like you're seeing your home for the first time. It's just like that with that camera.
I want to talk more about the specific, some of the specific pieces of advice you got. We have to take a break, though, coming up in about a minute. I guess the last thing I want to ask before the break is, you talked about taking this trip in response to your quarter life crisis. I wonder, was there sort of like a spiritual dimension pulling you on this trip as well, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. I love that you just described it as a spiritual dimension. I definitely felt called to this. It was just like, there's no way I can't do this. Once my mind was set on it, there was no stopping me. I was like, I have to go figure this out. I have to go find 1,000 strangers, and I have to ask them about what they wish they knew earlier, whoever they might be.
All right, we're going to take a break. We will continue our conversation with Imran Nouri. He's a public speaker and storyteller based in Chicago. He traveled America in a Toyota Camry asking strangers for life advice. He's compiled that into a book called Advice from America. It contains the advice, it contains these photographs of the strangers we've been talking about. We're going to continue our conversation when we return. I do want to invite you to join us. If you have one piece of advice you would offer to your 25-year-old self, what is it? 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. This is the 21st show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking with Imran Nouri. A couple of years ago, he set out on a journey across America, talking with strangers, taking their photograph, and collecting their best life advice. He's compiled that work into a book, Advice from America, which is available now. We'll have a link to it on our website, 21stshow.org. You can join our conversation now at 800-222-9455. What advice would you give yourself at age 25? 800-222-9455. All right, I want to ask about some of the most memorable pieces of advice you got. I thought maybe we could break these down by topic area, starting with love and romantic relationships.
Oh, that's a great one to start on. Love and romantic relationships. I heard so many stories across the whole country about this. And some of them were optimistic and others were very pessimistic, as you might imagine with love and romantic relationships. I heard the advice of don't get married over and over and over again,
Oh,
obviously coming
wow.
from people whose marriages didn't work out. And at the same time, I got plenty of people who were like, I wish I could have married this person sooner because it took me forever to find them. But once I did, wow, they're just the best partner I could possibly imagine. And so I heard it across the whole spectrum, and I think for me that signaled that everybody's journey with love and relationships are unique, right? Like I think everybody who said don't get married, again, they're not talking to you or me, they're talking to their younger self, and so it's probably pretty good advice for their younger self. And for the ones who said, I wish I would have found this guy earlier, I wish I would have like made the effort or whatever it might have been, that's also good advice for themselves, even if it might not be for you or me.
Yeah, I liked on your website you had a woman in Purcell, Oklahoma. Take your time in finding a life partner. Don't let the sex cloud your judgment about a person. And don't rush into marriage. They should be your best friend over everything else.
Exactly. That's
That's
one of
pretty
my
good advice.
favorites. She was
Yeah.
so sweet about it too. Like she came rushing to me as I was walking out of her store to tell me that. She had said something else prior, but she was like, no, this is the more important one. And that was a funny one.
So that's romantic relationships. What about family relationships?
Yeah, family is so, it was so interesting to me because I think this might be a sign about like the state of the US or the culture of the US. Not too many people talked about family, but for the ones who did, for example, I remember a mom who I met in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, who said she wishes that there wasn't a culture in the US of having kids leave when they're 18. She's like, they still need more guidance beyond that. So it shouldn't be as stigmatized for those kids to stay in the house beyond 18. Others talked about, for example, parents. They said, I wish I would have spent more. The very first stranger actually said, I wish I had spent more time with my parents before they were gone. He said, and I spent time with them when I lived with them, but not so much after I moved out and they're not around anymore. And then another one that really sticks out to me was someone who I met, I believe, near Newport, Rhode Island, who gave me an hour-long story of his entire family history, all to basically say that he had to cut out his family to become the best version of himself. He was like, they were toxic. When they visited my home, I would have bad dreams in them at night just because he would say their energy was bad. And so people talked about a lot of varieties, but overall, I think when I asked people the question, like, what do you know now that you wish you knew earlier? They generally talked about something to do with themselves rather than their family.
What about work-life balance?
Oh, another good one. You're bringing up all the hot topics. Work-life balance was a big one. So many people talked about how they wish they hadn't worked as many hours. Maybe one or two people said, I wish I would have worked harder. And for them, it was more that they were just couch bums for a long time. And then they decided to get their act together and live life fully. That's a little bit different. But for most people who talked about work, they just said, I missed out on so much. For example, a stranger I met, and I don't know if you're saving this for after this, but there's a stranger I met in Colorado Springs, Colorado, who had terminal stage 4 kidney cancer, who was using his remaining time to get matching tattoos with complete strangers. And I ended up getting my very first tattoo with him, a matching tattoo of a roll of film. But his advice for his younger self as a man who was in his 50s dying of cancer was to not work as many hours. He said he missed out on a lot of life. But when he got diagnosed, he lost everything. And that's also when he got more than he ever had in his life because he got human connections. And he said human connections are the really important thing, not work.
Yeah, Colorado Springs, Colorado. I saw the very striking photograph of him on your website as well. What piece of advice stuck with you the longest, right? What is there anything that haunts you even, maybe, if that's not too highfalutin a way to say it?
That's an interesting question. Anything that haunted me? I think, like I said, I went on the journey to figure out the meaning of life. And that's such a bold aspiration to have, to go to try to figure out the meaning of life. In a lot of ways, I found it in that guy. When I met him and saw him very optimistically living out his final moments, I think in so many ways that showed me that the only way to live is to live fully. Like, experience everything, the good and the bad and the in-between, completely fully, because all of us want to believe that we can live to be 80 years old and be healthy the whole time and die peacefully in our sleep. But that's not actually the case. And that's a tough pill to swallow. But I think once you do, you're able to live it fully. So Don Caskey, stranger number 549 in Colorado Springs, was the moment where I really embraced that. That really is the one that, I don't know if haunting is the right word. It haunts me in a good way. It helps me to live every day a little bit more fully than I probably would have if I hadn't met him specifically.
Had you always planned on making a book out of this experience, or what were you thinking about going into it?
I don't know if I was thinking about making a book. It was a thought for sure, just because I think life advice from strangers is naturally lends itself well to book format. But before the trip, I had no plan for what this was going to turn into. I just wanted to go ask these strangers this question, photograph them to sort of immortalize the moment. And then I even at the beginning, I said, I'll figure it out after it. I'll figure out what's best for it. I think towards the end of the trip, I started to realize that I was learning so much from these people all across America and noticing patterns too, and seeing how much we all had in common. And I think that last piece, the whole, we have a lot more in common with one another than we realize, was so powerful for me as someone who grew up in Ohio and didn't travel a lot as a kid. I was like, I need to share this with as many people as I possibly can. And there have to be at least a few avenues of doing that. I decided that there was going to be a free way, a paid way, and then a way to build my artistic credibility. And so the free way is social media. The paid way was turning it into a book. And I'm still working on getting some exhibitions to build that artist credibility. But yeah, it just made sense at the end of it to turn into a book.
We got a call. Somebody didn't want to go on the air, but Steve in Mount Pulaski, she asked, what is your experience in personal relationships while you were on this trip? Did you date? Did you find time to spend time with or find time to spend with friends, family, that sort of thing?
Wow, that's a great question. So I do have a lot of friends around the country who I was able to stay with here and there. Out of the 84 days, I believe I spent 20 of them, either I think 5 of those in a hotel and 15 nights with friends around the country. But a lot of my friends are here in Chicago. And so before I left, I had a little going away party saying like, hey, I'm going to go do this crazy thing. Hopefully I come back, you know, hopefully I don't get into like a tragic car accident or something like that. But yeah, my friends understood. They're like this, you know, they wanted to support me in going through this life-changing journey. I was open to the idea of dating somebody who I met on the journey, except that I also didn't want to cross that boundary with the strangers themselves. I think it was more like, I'm going to keep it somewhat professional with the strangers. And if something happens in the future with them, I'm open to it. But nothing did happen. So it was like nice to be able to just create 1,000 platonic connections with all these strangers.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it like actually putting together a book? Because you're self-publishing this, right? I imagine there was some learning curve there.
That's right. Yeah. Putting together this book was a monster of a task. There was so much that I anticipated and then didn't anticipate to the correct level between finishing the photos themselves took significantly more time than I thought it was going to be. Finishing meaning getting them to the right crop and doing tone adjustments. And then it took me significantly more time to transcribe and then polish up the advice that the strangers had shared with me, because I also wanted to make sure that I was doing their own voice justice in writing. So I tried to make it sound as close to, you know, their actual voice as I could. And then on top of that, yeah, I tried to get a traditional publisher and got quite a few responses from people who were very interested, but recognized that making a 672-page book is an enormous task that most publishers do not want to take on just for the nature of it, unless it's a dictionary or a textbook. And so I ended up just saying, you know what, I have this project. I want to have complete control over what it turns out to be. I'm going to self-publish it. I'm going to figure it out. And ended up running a Kickstarter campaign to fundraise for it, which raised about $68,000 from almost 1,000 people across the world, actually. And then I had to find a manufacturer for it that could make sure the prices weren't too expensive, getting it shipped over here from China, which is the ironic part of a book about Americans. But unfortunately, that's the way the costs go. It was a monster of a process. I think 2023 was just working absurd hours every week of the entire year to get it out.
So as we're coming to the end of our time together, what advice would you give yourself? I mean, you're not too far removed from that, but you know, if you had to go back maybe to you walking across the stage at your college graduation, you know, what would you tell yourself?
Yeah. So I'm 26 years old now. And if I could go back and tell my 18-year-old self something, I would tell him to let loose a little bit more. I, as an 18-year-old, wanted to accomplish so much as a student at Ohio State University, at the Ohio State University, excuse me.
Oh,
and I almost forgot the D. I think I would have got a lot of crap from people if I didn't include that. But
Illinois,
I think
it's
my
18-year-old,
yeah, that's right. I think my 18-year-old self was just so caught up in getting good grades, being really involved, getting to the highest level within my involvements that I didn't go out as much. And because I didn't go out as much, I didn't form really strong friendships in college with a lot of people who I worked closely with in our involvements. But, you know, after graduating, I realized that my closest friends are the ones who I was able to let loose with in my final semester in college, right before graduating. And so really, I would tell him to loosen up, to be open to new experiences, to try everything once, and to live fully, right? I think my younger self was just so caught up in the moment of doing what I was quote unquote supposed to do that I didn't live as fully as I could have. But I'm certainly making up for it now.
What will you do next?
Oh, what's next? So this year is really focused on getting the book out there and doing as many talks as possible. I actually have a TED Talk coming up in Emory University in Atlanta in a few weeks. Hopefully that'll go up on YouTube soon after. That TED Talk is about embracing the quarter life crisis, which is just perfect timing for what I did. I just want other 20 somethings to understand that it is the most uncomfortable experience to go through the quarter life crisis of questioning everything about who you are and what you want to do with life, and embracing those feelings is the only way to move through them. That, and of course, spreading the message this year and many, many years beyond, of the fact that we all have a lot more in common with one another than the things that tear us apart. And I hope that people can see that more clearly with this photo series and book.
Imran Nouri is a storyteller and public speaker based in Chicago. His book is called Advice from America. You can get it now on Amazon. We'll also just have a link to it on our website, 21stshow.org. Imran Nouri, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your story with us today on the
Thanks
21st
for
Show.
having me. I appreciate it.
Coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, we are going to be taking a deep dive into the migrants being bused to Chicago from Texas, especially how downstate communities across Illinois are either preparing to do their part or already helping to take in some of these migrants who have become a part of the communities. We'll hear from organizers in the Quad Cities, Bloomington Normal, and Champaign-Urbana. That's all coming up tomorrow. If you have a question or comment about the situation of migrants, let us know. You can email talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can find that address, our voicemail line, every other way to get in touch with us, all on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find links to our podcast, or just look us up on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.